Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So recently, Guitar Nerd switched to using Lewitt microphones, specifically the LCT440 condenser mic. Now, this mic is super affordable and very versatile. It's what I'm using right now. In fact, there are a bunch of videos from independent studio engineers with way more audio know-how than me comparing the LCT440 to mics three times its value, and it absolutely holding up. Plus, this mic is as good for instrument capture as it is for podcasting, as it is for vocals, which is great because I don't like messing around with mics, and I can literally use this for everything. The proof is in the pudding, though. So here is my Tweed Blues Junior, recorded at a reasonable room volume using nothing but the Lewitt LCT440. Nothing has been added in post, no compressors or EQs. This is exactly how the Lewitt LCT440 captures the sound of Fender's greatest amplifier. Absolutely pucker. The 440 captures all of the depth and the character of the Blues Junior, and all I had to do was move it over the other side of the office and pop it in front of the amp. So if you're doing anything with home studio vibes, I strongly recommend this wonderful and affordable microphone. Check it out at lewitt-audio.com. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Hello, Mr. Joe.
Hello, Mr. Matt. Hello, welcome. Welcome back, dear listener. Episode 44, hurtling towards the end of Season 3. Gear of the Year, round the corner.
Yes, I know. It's close, Joe. The end of the year is very close, and I can't believe it.
Yeah, so we still haven't sorted out exactly what we're doing for Gear of the Year, but that's fine. I'm going to do it, dear listener. I am going to do it. Okay, so before we actually start getting into the meat and potatoes of this podcast, I need to let you all know something, dear listener. I am going on tour. I've actually already been on the first bit of my tour. I did Brighton, UK, and London over the weekend. I've got a couple of days off, and then I'm back off to Bristol, Birmingham, up north and across to Ireland. But it's going to take me the best part of 2 weeks, and I haven't been able to organize a podcast for next week. I was trying to record ahead to get it out in time, but things being what they have been, I've had an awful lot of stuff going on outside of this, and it's it's affected that. So I'm afraid there's going to be a week off next week. But don't worry. Please don't hate me, dear listener. I'm going to make it up to you because we are going to have the best ever gear of the year. We've still got guests booked for a couple of episodes this year. The gear of the year is going to be intense. We're going to do some quizzes to finish up the year. There's going to be some special appearances, if you catch my drift, dear listener, on the Patreon side of things by a few old podcast friends. So, you know, look, watch this space. So I apologize for next week, but I assure you the end of season three is going to be absolutely fantastic.
Excellent.
That is it. That is it.
End of the year. And it'll be, you know, the good thing about Gear of the Year is remembering all the things that we talked about and then forgot that we talked about.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then going, oh, yeah, that was really good. And then also discovering all the things that we didn't talk about at all.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I always I start every year by making a Gear of the Year list. So we have, dear listener, like a sort of shared Google Notes document for each episode that lists all the things we're going to touch upon and all of the new releases for that week, whether we get round to talking about them or not, which is handy. And what I do at the start of the year is, at the end of every week, I grab all those news articles and I put them in a separate document for Gear of the Year. And I start forgetting to do that around episode 5 or 6, which means when it comes around to Gear of the Year, I have the laborious task of going back through every single episode and finding each news article and popping it in. But it is great for being thorough and making sure I don't miss anything at the end of the year. I feel like it's still been a muted year. It feels like a bit of the year of the pre-owned market. And actually, one of the things we're going to talk about a bit on this episode, dear listener, is Reverb have released their bestsellers. Although the website was down earlier. It's back up.
Ooh, I was trying to click at the watch list and I was like, no, it's going to ruin the podcast.
Yeah, I know. It's back up, so we're good. So we're going to have a look at the best-selling guitars, best-selling bass guitars, best-selling amplifiers, best-selling effects pedals. The great thing about Reverb now, they do it this year. I can't remember if they did it last year, but they've separated out like best new products of the year and then best overall, because we know sort of there are a few classics that are just always going to appear and probably trump most new things. Like, it's interesting to see things like the Boss DS1 and the Boss Blues Driver and the Proco Rat appearing incredibly high on effects pedal list for the year.
Yeah, anyway, so it's total sales globally, right? If I remember.
That's right. And there are a few things to remember, dear listener, when considering this list. It's not ultimate because there are an awful lot of retailers that don't stock on Reverb. So this can only be kind of that small, you know, whatever stuff is available on Reverb at the time. And of course, Reverb has a much stronger pre-owned market than it does new stuff. But nonetheless, we'll have a flick through, have a look at those things. But we see there are a few things in my head for Gear of the Year that stand out. I also think there have been a few things that I've really disliked that, looking at the bestsellers, have sold really well, which I find depressing. So I think potentially we're going to see... Actually, no, I have faith in our listeners that they have good taste. I'm hoping that when we do Gear of the Year, when we do Listener's Choice, those few things that I absolutely hate don't appear in their selection. But
this year has really felt like a blur, to be honest, in terms of what's come out. And then there's also a lot of stuff. I get the feeling there's a lot of stuff coming out sort of like now. Just as we started this podcast, there was a new announcement from Squire, which we might get to later.
We will.
But yeah, it feels like, I don't know, there's no, NAMM is not in January.
No. When is it? April?
It is April. Yeah, April. It's April.
Yeah. Are you going? I'm not going.
I don't know. Right. Is the correct answer to that question. I don't know yet. I don't know. It's not really my bag. I don't really organize it. So maybe I'd like to go. I'd like to hang out with all the people that we're friends with. But I think obviously January has always been a really busy time, and that's not going to be the case. I don't know whether more stuff's going to come out ready for Christmas. I think, you know, more stuff has just happened throughout the year, hasn't it? Because,
yeah.
You know, supply. I mean, we've literally just seen this announcement from Eventide as well, which maybe we'll get to later as well. But
still
some big stuff coming out.
Absolutely. Well, you know, even from an Ashdown perspective, I spent Sunday after I got back from my gig in today, putting together sort of the one sheet, as it were, the sort of the press announcement for the new stuff for 2023. And it's really exciting for me because I know, dear listener, I've said, and Matt, I've said that I've had a hand in a handful of things that Ashdown have put out over the last little while since I've worked for them. But this year is the first year that we're doing this overhaul of stuff. The core stuff will stay, but there's this overhaul of everything else. And I was like looking through it and I was like, I'm actually an awful lot of this stuff are things that I either presented, I pitched, because we all pitch in ideas. I either pitched or I helped develop, but almost all of them I've had a hand in. And I'm really excited about it. There's like a range of guitar amps that I know, I appreciate, dear listener. I know that Ashdown's a bass amp brand. It's tricky for a company like that to do guitar amps, but some really nice stuff, some really like stripped back little valve numbers, tasteful looking cabinets. So I've got high hopes for that range of stuff. And then some cool, completely solid state bass amp heads and tabs, and then this super affordable line of basses that I've been working on in some great colors. So I'm excited about that. 2023, the year that I think you're going to see a big change in the stuff that Ashdown do. And without blowing my own trumpet, an awful lot of that change had something to do with me at somewhere along the line. So I'm pretty proud of it. Yeah.
What you want to do is bring back the Fallen Angel. What was it called? Was it the Fallen Angel?
It was the Fallen Angel. Still incredibly popular. People who like the amp love the amp. I hate it. Like, that was actually one of the subject points. They were like, should we bring it back? People seem to really love it.
Wasn't
but of course,
the first Ashdown amp?
It was the first Ashdown guitar amp.
Right, okay. Yeah.
So it was that. But of course, you know, it was a 6505 style thing, wasn't it? Mm. With a big 412. And of course, it's not just that that's not my vibe, is I wouldn't be able to have input in that product because I don't know what people would look for in that product. But I was up there last week. I was testing bits and bobs. So it's really great. Like, the designers give you these breadboard versions of products, and you play them for a bit, and then you give them feedback on tone changes and things like that. And then we do the looks a little bit later. So we're doing some of that, and it was fun doing that for the guitar things, to be honest, rather than the bass things. But no, this is totally different. I'm going after it's of course my taste. I'm going after like all valve, low wattage, like 15 watt, small sort of lunchbox style heads with just the right amount of stuff. I'm falling out with the idea of like cab sims and stuff at the moment. I'm like, why don't we just have great quality DIs? Isn't that the point? Isn't a cab sim just an EQ bump? You know, why don't we just do that at the other end? Why don't we just do that with the three bands of EQ you have?
I think, yeah, in some ways you just kind of want to go line out and you want to plug it into something and it sounds really good. I mean, that's that, you know, just talking of my own experience and products, obviously that's kind of what I did with the Dual Cube. When we were shooting some demos internally, I was just like, just take the line out. And it's like, it didn't really change anything. I was like, that sounds really good. And I was like, that's fine, that'll do.
I love that product. The Boss, the Dual Cube, both the guitar and the bass one, are absolutely fantastic. Like, kind I mean, they've completely replaced what was where the positive grid was in my house. Half of the reason being that to really get the most out of the positive grid, you're logging your phone into it and switching things up on your phone. And that's great. That's handy to be able to not be at the amplifier to change settings. But honestly, what do I do with an amp at home? I set an edge of breakup tone with a fair chunk of reverb on it, and I don't really touch it past that because that's how I noodle at home. And just the sound, I can't believe the Roland Cube is as loud and as present as it is. Oh, sorry, the Boss Cube is a Dual Cube is as loud and present as it is. And runs off batteries if you want as well.
Yeah, it's just got some, it has got some chunky volume, which I just love. I think it's, you know, it's kind of what you want, isn't it? You don't want to, I always remember the first series, the Yamaha THRs, like when we had them installed, they were always like, you know, if you were going to demo it for someone, you'd always be like, right, better like make sure you turn the volume up to like 9. So there was actually like something out of it. Do you know what I mean?
Were they really quiet, the first ones?
The first ones, I always remember the ones we had on the display. They were really, really quiet. I always remember you almost, in some ways, I want it to be a bit like a valve amp in the sense that it's kind of a lot of your volume's in the first third of the amp, and then you just and then you take it from there, you know. But I always remember you had to get them quite a way up to get some decent volume out of it.
I've spent less time with that amp than I guess any of the competition, like, you know, the Boss stuff or Positive Grid, or I don't know. Anyone else I can think of?
I guess for me, and I am biased, but I guess for me it is really about plug and play, you know. And the Spark for me was always a bit like, that's not plug and play.
Yeah, I agree. I've come round to that thing. I think it's what made me end up using the Helix less and less. Even though I actually think the Helix is incredibly intuitive, dear listener, and you know, a fantastic bit. I just, I could say the same thing about the newer DSPs, Quad Cortex or the Boss GT. Like, it's those things when there's all that stuff on there, and essentially what you need is an edge of breakup amp with a bit of reverb. Which isn't what everyone needs, but that tends to be how I'm playing at home, and. Yeah, I just don't need all that stuff. And I agree. The Positive Grid, I was like, well, which one of these amplifiers do I use? Which one of these 10 reverbs do I use? I just like that the Boss Dual Cube, I'm just, picking the... I can't remember what you call it. Is it the British... Is British style? I
picked the British is the like the Voxy type one.
Exactly. That's obviously
like
what
the Marshall type one.
Yeah. So I obviously choose the British one and a bunch of reverb, and it just sounds great.
Yeah, that's all you need.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. But Matt, I can't believe it. It's finally happened.
It has.
I can't believe it's happened. How long ago did we start talking about? We had planned to make an episode of this, I think, 6 weeks ago.
So the EOB, the Ed O'Brien, it turned up on my door totally unannounced in classic fashion of delivery drivers. It turned up. No, I actually think it was a replacement because I think...
Do you think the original is still lost? Yeah.
The original... Someone out there is... No, actually, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, someone out there's got their hands on a nice little...
No, it's just in a warehouse somewhere.
It is. It's absolutely in the Raiders of the Lost
Raiders
Ark
of the
warehouse.
Lost Ark. Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like that massive warehouse of like suitcases that have been lost on planes.
Yeah.
You know, that are just 99% closed. It's just there somewhere. Really sadly... It is probably just in a warehouse somewhere because it basically got the wrong label put on it.
Yeah, basically. What we're talking about, dear listener, because we've just said EOB so far, there's the Fender Ed O'Brien Stratocaster.
Yes, the Ed O'Brien Stratocaster. So, yeah, it turned up on my door unannounced on Wednesday, Thursday.
I can't believe how many mods you've made since then.
I took it to bits as soon as I got it. And was just like, so I plugged it in. I was like, does it work? I was like, yeah, it's great. I mean, it was just good. It was good in a way that my wife had COVID and we decided to cancel the holiday. So I was actually in, because otherwise I wouldn't have been in. I would have missed the delivery and would be right back to square one of trying to find out where it's gone. I got it and I had just a great guitar. I mean, it's been so many years since I played the one that we had for review.
Oh, it's just so rare to get a Strat with a proper neck on it.
I know. Well, it reminds me very much of the neck that's on the Bajas. They're kind of very chunky. But that kind of... It's very much... I think what's interesting about it, first comments, it's very lightweight, which is it's kind of nice. Really nice and lightweight.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
It's strung up with nines, which is way too light. Way too light. But that's fine. So, strung up with nines. But it's a very vintage guitar in the sense that you've got vintage machine heads. Right. The kind of the post ones where you put the string
the
in the middle.
Ones. Oh, lovely, yes.
You've then got a... So I spent ages, like, trying to find spec details and stuff on it and measuring things, and it's like, it's actually, and then got the manual up of like all the parts and then pulled up all the part numbers to be like, oh, which parts are these, because I'm a loser.
You sound like Jay Cross.
And yeah, it basically has the Fender, I think it's an American Trem. There's the Trem parts that they're on a lot of the American instruments, so that's like vintage American string spacing and mounting plate on the Trem.
Right.
Because I was thinking very much about, and we'll talk about it in a minute, but like mods or changing parts, and you kind of got to know what size is, because they talk about imports and squires, and, you know, because it's a Mexican built guitar, I should say that. Mexican built guitar. So obviously that can sometimes vary the parts that they use. But yeah, very vintage in that sense, in the sense of the saddles. But the great thing is the neck profile is 9.5, so it's a little bit more modern. It's a little bit easier to play. It's like an unfinished, like, satin maple neck, which is really nice, super smooth.
Awful.
And the neck goes from a kind of, yeah, deep V to like a kind of, they call it a 10-56 V, so it's more V-like at the lower end, so the kind of first frets, and then it's a little bit rounder as you go into the middle and up the top, so much easier to play. And then, yeah, you've got a Sustainiac in the neck, a Texas Special in the middle, and then a JB Junior in the bridge. And it's kind of like, it still sounds like a Strat, because I was a bit worried, and it'd been a while since I played it, I was like, effectively, it's an HSH guitar, because the Sustainiac is a humbucker.
Yeah.
And then you've got a single coil, and then you've got another humbucker. So yeah. I was like, is it even going to sound like, do I need it to sound like a Strat? Is it going to sound like a Strat? Do I really care if it sounds like a Strat?
The best thing about that JB Mini is that they have a Strat-y feel in the bridge, but like supercharged. I've always loved that pickup.
It basically sounds like a Strat on steroids, which is kind of always been my appeal with the Strat Plus and the Lace sensors, is that it still sounds like a Strat. It's just a bit beefier, I guess. And yeah, I mean, it does really sound just beefy. It's amazing. It sounds like a really, really beefy Strat. And then just spent a bit of time with it today, kind of learning how the sustainer works and like learning how to tame that. So you've then also got volume, tone, and volume. But the third volume is the intensity of the sustainer.
Right.
So it's kind of like...
And you've got a little three-way toggle, right?
Yeah, so you've got two toggles, sustainer on and off, and then you've got a three-way sustain that goes between natural mode, mix mode, and then harmonic mode. So harmonic, it's exactly the same as an Evo, basically. So you've got that kind of upper octave mode, your kind of standard mode, and then you can get a mix of the two. And the intensity control basically controls the intensity of the vibration, the electromagnet in the sustainer.
Right.
So when you turn the sustainer on, what it does is it turns the neck pickup on and then routes everything to the bridge pickup. So the sustainer works like your... The neck pickup works like your Ebow, and then the bridge pickup works like the pickup to then output the signal.
Yeah.
But yeah, got it. And then I was like, I was thinking, I'd already been thinking about different scratch plates. And I was like,
I'm a big fan. So I will admit that your scratch plate change I'm not a fan of, because I love an Olympic weight.
Olympic white
with a white guard, especially if it's an off-white guard, I'm a big fan of.
I think the white with the kind of white plastic hardware makes it look really cheap.
Right.
I am a big fan, especially on vintage guitars, of single ply scratch plates.
Right.
Or tortoiseshell. And I was like, I'm not going to put tortoiseshell on it because I've pretty much got tortoiseshell on everything else. So I was like, and then I was like, you know, you just like Google guitar and color and pick guard options. And I was like, I wonder what this looks like with this. And then I suddenly remembered the J Mascus Jazzmaster.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, that looked really good in white with
gold,
anodized
plates are great with white. They only work with two colors, sunburst and white.
So I was like, stuff it, I'm gonna do that. And then I went to I was like, where can I order one from? And I was like looking around, and there's like some, you know, you can get all these like cheap like Chinese manufactured ones. They're like, oh, it takes like 7 weeks and it comes from China. I think it's WD Music, or they're called Armstrong Music now. And
yes,
they're,
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
They're like an offshoot of an American shop, but I think they were like, oh, they're all made to order, it takes 6 weeks. And then I was like, Fender make one, and obviously Fender make the official one. So I got that, because I realized, also talking of the vintage specs, it's an 8-screw scratch plate, not a more modern 11-screw scratch plate. I don't think that really makes a massive difference, but I was
you'd be surprised. I mean, I don't know, but if it works like the precision base, you get slightly exposed holes if you try and switch between the two.
Right, yeah. So so anyway, I got that. And then at the same time, I was like, got to get a new strap for it. New guitar, got to get a new strap.
So who'd you go to? Who'd you choose?
There's only one option in my eyes, Joe, and that is Mother Mary straps, straight from James's home of tone.
Right.
Speaking to good old Mr. James over at James's home of tone. I was just like, because they're the best. And for anyone listening who doesn't know, they are just really nice, really well-built straps that come in a range of really funky fabrics. They just make some really nice straps that, yeah, just look a bit different to everything else. They're not super expensive. They're not exactly the cheapest straps.
I would say they are pretty affordable. They're like $50, aren't they? That's
roughly about 50 bucks.
I think 50 bucks is fair.
They're a good quality strap, and that's what you want, right? So so I was like, spoke to James and was like, oh, can you sort something out? Because they do like basically different like limited drops of straps and different things. He's always got different ones on his website. I went for the ones on his website, and now I'm looking at the ones on their website, and oh my God, they've got like so many good ones. And they obviously do a lot in like floral and pink and things that were like old curtains and stuff like that, which is just, they're just different to any other strap.
Their straps look fantastic. I wish they weren't made out of dead animals, but they look fantastic.
Not vegan, unfortunately, for all of our vegan listeners. We know there's a few of you out there. And obviously the great thing about James's Home Tone is he does lots of other things and nice things. And nice things to look at, and he's very helpful. But one of the things I thought was quite cool, I'm just going to try and find it so I can the exact thing. So he's paired up. He hasn't really like talked about it or pushed it much. Just put them on the website, and I saw it, and I was like, oh, that would look good. So he's teamed up with Indra Guitars.
I have an Indra scratch plate for my jazz bass.
Oh, do you?
He does like acid etched plates.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. So yeah, Indra Guitars. He's teamed up with them to make some, like, basically acid etched neck plates.
Oh yes, I did see these.
James Homer Tone logo. So they're kind so of cool. Strat knob that beaming up the little house. And yeah, they've got one in like a kind of brushed brass, and I was like, that would also look good with the anodized gold scratch plate. So he sorted me out one of those as well, and I put them all on, and I set it up with 11s, and it played like crap. And I totally buggered it, and I was like, oh my god, I can't. It's like, but no, I'm gonna dig myself out of this hole. I'm gonna dig myself out of this hole. And I remember, Joe, you sent me the music, because I remembered you sent me the Music Nomad setup kit.
Yes.
And I foolishly was like, yeah, cool, this and that. And then I sort of knew what I was doing. And then I sort of did it all. And then I was like, well, this is rubbish. I was like, it doesn't play good at all. And then I realized what I thought was just a tiny booklet of other things they sell was actually a step-by-step setup guide using all of their tools. Yes. So on my lunch break today, I did a proper setup following the step-by-step guide, and now it plays absolutely wonderfully. And I would honestly urge everyone, whether you're going to do a lot of setups or whether you are just need something in a toolkit, I would recommend you buy their guitar setup kit. Now, I think they call it, I don't know if they have a particular name for this kit. I think they call it the Precision Setup Guide.
Yes, that sounds right.
Which is a 6-piece kit. So what you get is you get 2 radius gauges. You get a tool to measure the strings, whether you're for the nut depth, and then 1 to measure the truss rod and measurements. And then you also get this kind of like credit card shaped piece of metal on every side.
So has handy.
Different measurements for string height, for pickup height. It has a kind of ideal heights for different setups. And then they get this little book that walks you through step by step. And it was really interesting because it's like, you do this, and then you do this, make sure, and then you do this. And then this is the string, and then the interesting one was the radius gauge. I was like, oh, why do you need to measure the radius if you know what it is? But it's actually for resting on the strings and then getting the radius of the strings on your saddles. Correct.
Yeah.
And then once I'd gone through that and I'd done it properly, I was like, oh, this is great. I was using that comes with a little pick capo, was using that completely wrong because I thought I knew better. And that's why you should always read the manual. Because basically I wasn't putting the pick capo on right. And then I was using the measurement gauge and I was like, God, the action's still way too high. So I basically like tightened the truss rod like beyond belief. And then it bottomed the whole thing out and I was like, oh no. And then I loosened it, and then that was the only thing about this Strat that they could absolutely change. And this is the one thing about vintage guitars that is rubbish. You've got to take the neck off to adjust the truss rod. Yeah. I must have had the neck off about 8 times.
Yeah, yeah. To my 50s P bass the same. Like, and I've had to like filler the neck plate holes because I've owned the guitar for what, 15 years, and I've had the neck off so many times that it doesn't sit in the. It's a terrible feature.
Yeah, it's a rubbish design. And then like when you watch like the official Fender setup video, they're like, yeah, don't take all the screws out, just do like 30% on this one, 8%, and then just like pop it off. And it's like, you can't, because like the strings are in the way, and it's like it doesn't work. And I'm just like, so anyway, so I had the neck off a few times, did that, but now I've sort of played around with it. I did all of that, and then I plugged it in, and I was like, the neck pickup doesn't work. Because I tell you, it was an absolute faff trying to stuff all the wiring back into the cavities, putting the plate back on, because there's so many wires in there.
It takes a battery as well, doesn't it?
It takes a battery in the back. So the back has got the back plate with the trem claw, and then it's got a battery pack, and then it's got another cutout for the Sustainiac circuit board, which is probably the reason it's quite light, because it's got three...
Yeah, so much wood missing.
But yeah, it took me ages, and I was like, God, neck pickup's not right. And again, reading the manual, it gives you a pickup height gauge, and I thought it was the pickup height from the pickup to the string, just like normal, but you've got to fret at the like top fret and then measure it. And I was like, oh, yes. Everything's way too low. Sustainiac basically wasn't working. It was just like completely farting out. And then obviously I realized that it's obviously got to have a certain level of like magnetic pull.
Yeah.
So you always learn something. You've got to make mistakes to learn.
No, it sounds like you were on a proper journey this up.
And then I put the strap on it and I played it, and it sounds great.
So the strap? What was the type of strap that you got?
I got, I can't remember the name now. I'm going to have a look. But it is basically white with some red flowers on it. It's very lovely.
It looks lovely.
I think they call it... I'd have to have a look on James.
No, it's fine, but it's lovely. It's a lovely looking strap.
Yeah, I just thought, you know, a bit of a white strap with a bit of colour just brings out a little bit of the guitar. But I say one of the biggest changes that I made that I was amazed made the difference, and I don't know if it's in my head or not, but one of the first things I did was I took the back plate off because I wanted to see how many springs were in there.
Uh-huh.
And I was measuring and I was testing the trem block to see if the vintage ones that they put in Fender guitars are steel or not, which they're not. They're like a compound.
Right.
And I left it off and I strummed the guitar and it just suddenly was just super open and just like super loud. And I haven't put it back on.
Oh, cool. That's really cool. That's a lovely thing to find out.
Yeah, they do say sometimes that obviously there's a few people out there like Mr. Eric Johnson, who don't have a backplate. But
I took the backplates off of all my strats, but that was just because they feel uncomfortable.
I just took it off and it sounded better, so I just sort of left it. And then so as of lunchtime, kind of finally got it all set up and all working. And there's a bigger and greater sense of achievement and playing it when it all works. And
that's wonderful. So now that it's all done, like, are you 100% happy with this guitar? How do you feel about it? Yeah. In comparison to, you own a bunch of pretty high quality guitars. How is this comparing?
Well, it's interesting because obviously the guitar I'm going to compare it to the most is my Music Man.
Yeah. James Valentine.
My James Valentine. My other Nick Huber Krautster is obviously my other high-end guitar. Whoa, but
fantastic guitar.
I play the Music Man, you know, 90% of the time. And obviously that's the guitar you're comparing it to. And the neck is very similar in terms of feel.
Oh, is it? I always thought it was quite a taper on the Valentine.
No, it's... Well,
I'm just remembering it wrong. I've only played one a handful of times.
In terms of like the satin feel and the kind of smoothness of it, it's really, really similar. It's a kind of similar thickness as well, which is nice. Definitely can feel the different frets on the Valentine compared to the Ed O'Brien, which is fine. And they both play really, really...
Is the Ed O'Brien nicely. Very traditional, tall and thin?
Yeah, I can't remember what... the actual name of the frets but they're kind of, yeah, very much like vintage frets.
Right.
But ultimately, I just want all my guitars to almost play exactly the same, which is obviously,
right,
you know, a Les Paul is going to play differently to a Strat, obviously. But, you know, you kind of want them to have a similar kind of feel, which is why I put 11s on the Ed O'Brien, which is why I've got 11s on the other, basically 11s on everything. And because playing nines when I got out of the box, I'm like, God, this feels like jelly. Like there's nothing there.
Yeah.
So it was nice putting 11s on. But actually, I know when it came out, a lot of people were like, oh, it's expensive. But actually, because it's expensive for a Mexican guitar. But I think at retail on the Fender website, like 12.99 euro, £12.29, I think maybe. I think it's you get so much guitar for your money, even just in terms of like a real vintage kind of spec almost. But I think, you know, the big thing that Ed O'Brien said when they made that guitar was that he didn't want it to be a signature guitar that felt like when you picked it up, you had to like play like him or the person whose name was on it.
Yeah.
He wanted to make a great guitar that anyone could pick up and be inspired to make music on, because it hasn't actually got his name on it anywhere.
Really? Oh, that's interesting. Does it have something on like the back, the neck plate?
Yeah, the neck plate's got a stamp and a serial number that says Ed O'Brien, but and the scratch plate says Ed O'Brien on it as well. But underneath, not on the top.
Really? Oh, that's cool.
So yeah, you can't see his name on it at all or anything like that. The only weird thing is that it comes with a gig bag, but Fender pack the guitar in the box and then shove the gig bag down the side. And I was like, why don't you put the guitar in the gig bag?
Be
and
safe,
then ship the guitar in the gig bag. But yeah, so it was interesting you say that about how does it stack up, because before I got it, I was like, I'm probably gonna change the saddles, I'm probably gonna change the trem block, you know, and put these, but actually now that I've set it up, I'm like, do you need to do any of that? I don't know if you've ever had that, Joe, where you're like, oh, I'm gonna change this, I'm gonna change that, but actually, are you changing it because you can change it and there's options out there to change it, or because you actually feel that the change would make a difference?
I will say that the Ed O'Brien is a very modded guitar out of the box. So there's less need to adjust it.
There's less need for pickups and stuff.
Well, that's it. So the reason that you adjust normally is because, you know, for example, you buy a Fender Player Stratocaster, and you know, actually it's a bad example because the new pickups for the Player series have punched well above their weight. You buy a random Stratocaster, it's affordable, maybe it's Mexican made, and you're like, these pickups are, probably just fine. You know, they're just going to be cheap and stock, and you want to get your sound, your stamp on that. So you purchase a set of pickups that are more in line with the specific thing that you want to do. Whereas the Ed O'Brien's already a signature model. Why would you buy a signature model and then mod it?
Yeah. I guess, I mean, the great thing is it is a great guitar to kind of mess around with in that sense, because it feels less that you're like destroying Jimi Hendrix's soul by modding a Jimi Hendrix Strat. And actually, yeah, you've kind of got a really well built guitar. And I think the thing is, I must admit, maybe slightly phased by like, maybe I want like better block saddles on it, or maybe I want to put a different trem block on it because the one that's in there isn't like, you know, vintage correct or pure steel or whatever. And then I'm like, actually, when I plugged it in, I think it sounds really good. So the difference of actually doing anything would be, I don't know. I don't know whether it would only be satisfying to buy the part and have it in the post and then put it on. And then would you really hear the difference, or do you need to make the difference?
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that, you know, I'm sort of realistically going, probably don't need to bother. The only thing that did worry me was the pressed saddles, because when you've got bent saddles, I found that sometimes the adjustment screws have stick out and it's maybe not as comfortable to rest your hand on, but they're actually completely flush on this.
Oh really? That's I have permanent scars on the underside of my palm from playing 60s precision basses.
Yeah, no, so actually, like, straight out of the box, set it up, yeah, it's really good, and I wouldn't really change a thing. The only thing I thought was maybe like locking machine heads, but then I was like, to be honest, it's set up with the bridge completely flat against the body, with only two springs, so you can use a trem and it's still fairly light, but the bridge is pulled all the way back. And I'm like, I'm not even going to use the trem on it, to be honest. I don't think I'll use the trem. So I was like, actually, it's fine. The only thing I would potentially do is maybe I'll put another spring in the back. But then actually, that would change the tension a bit, and it kind of feels like it's all fine. So you don't really need to do anything apart from put thicker strings on it.
Yeah, obviously. What is it? What is happening? Dear listener, are we wrong? Is there something wrong with us? Like, why do you want nines? 11s make it feel like a proper instrument.
Yeah, it's funny because you know, a friend of mine, I know you've met him a few times, Joe, Alex Hutchins, obviously amazing, just amazing player. And so many times I've sat down and played his like Waghorn guitars, which are like amazing, like custom built guitars from Bristol. But he plays eights with literally like the lowest. I mean, his touch is so light.
That's
that
the
strings
isn't
never
it?
Yeah. buzz. Whereas I play it, I'm like, it's like, kunk. It's like, yeah. I'm like, I can't ring a note out of this thing. And then when he plays it, it's like, it's a totally different thing. I'm just like, what's... but then he's like played one of my guitars and he's like, man, how do you play this?
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is it's like setups are so
personal.
Yeah, it's like a part of your personality, isn't it?
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that's the thing, like modding part and lots of different parts and options is great, but actually you should only do it if the guitar doesn't work for you. And that's, you know, why I've done things like I modded the Baja in terms of the pickups. I modded my Beat Baritone Chapman because of that. And, you know, but otherwise, if you like the guitar, don't change anything. You know, I changed the pickups in the Huber because I didn't like the sound of the pickups that are in there, but I wouldn't change anything about the guitar because the guitar itself is just, it's just perfect. The only guitar I've not touched apart from the string gauge is the Valentine.
Really? Well,
yeah. And do you know, it was, I know we've talked about this before, but we quite often say, oh, you know, the great thing about Music Man is, you know, where you've got an artist signature, the one that comes off the shelf is exactly the same as the one that the artist plays on tour.
Yeah, and they're always a complete reinvention of everything.
Yeah, and then I was watching a rig rundown with Chris Shiflett from the Foo Fighters, and obviously he's got a signature telly, but the one he plays on stage is a Masterbuilt one. Because he was like, oh, you know, we had to make lots of changes and cutbacks to hit a certain price point and this, that, and the other. So he's like, when I said, oh, you know, I'm going to get one, we said, let's do one with all the bells and whistles and got a Masterbuilt one. I'm like, it's not the same guitar, though.
No, that's, I don't like that. You know, that's not a cool thing to do. You know, there are plenty of players that, man, it's not just Music Man. There are plenty of Fender players that have managed that play their goddamn signature models. I mean, actually, it was one of the things. Who? What guest did we? Oh, it was Thorpey, wasn't it? When we had Thorpey on, and he was like, didn't like that about Bonamassa, that he has umpteen signature models and plays precisely zero of them. Yeah. I do think Bonamassa is an exception to the rule. I disagreed with Thorpey on that, in that I think Bonamassa's entire purpose is to play these vintage guitars, so it's kind of impossible for him to play his signature models. That's not the point. You go to see Bonamassa not because you like his music, because let's face it, it's not very good. What you do is you go there to hear the incredible tone of these amazing vintage instruments.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, I think that's the thing, isn't it? But for me, if I could have a signature guitar from anyone, it would be Music Man. And it would be
really,
because,
wow.
Well, I think it's because you would make a guitar, they would make a guitar exactly how you wanted it.
Yeah.
Regardless of how many people maybe wanted to buy that exact same guitar, if they really believed in you as an artist. But the great thing is that anyone that did want to play your guitar could play your actual guitar, because the guitar that they will give you off the factory will be no different to the guitar that they will sell to everyone else.
Yeah.
And I really like that. And I like that creative freedom. And I think, you know, I love Fender, and, you know, it's great to own a new Fender. You know, it's been a while since I bought a new guitar. And but ultimately, if you're going to have a custom, they're probably just going to be like, well, you can have Strat or Tele or Jazzmaster or Jaguar. And then it's like, which neck? You know, you're kind of just like we do on so many custom builders' websites, you're just going down the list, aren't you, until they get to your spec. And maybe if you're that high profile, they might change the neck profile, do you a custom neck profile, or, you know.
But well, like, you know, I remember, you know, I'm going to see Biffy Clyro tomorrow playing Bournemouth, and they've invited me to come down for the sound check, and I'm going to go up on stage and check out all their gear and everything. Dear listener, it's because James Johnson, the bass player in Biffy Clyro, is an Ashdown artist. We're making him a bass at the moment, a new signature bass, so that's kind of why. But I've met him before, and they asked if I'd be, you know, come down, so I'm going to go down and check all this stuff out. But anyway, my the roundabout point here was both Simon Neil and James Johnson used to have Squire signature models. But of course, Simon Neill plays exclusively, and he has a great selection of them, but they are all Heavy Relic 60s style Fender Strat custom shops. And for whatever reason, I mean, maybe I'll ask him, you know, at one point, but his the signature model that came out of Squire for him was a Fiesta Red maple necked 50s Strat, which I have never seen him play. James Johnson, the bass player, at least he played the Fender, the Squire signature bass that he had. But I always thought that was the Simon Neill's was the weirdest signature model ever, because he's almost a man that I would say is known for playing 60s Strats.
Yeah, it's a great looking Squire though.
It is a great looking Squire. Fiesta Red maple neck is very, very cool.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, if you didn't know the name of it and you said guess whose signature model this is, he's probably, you know, one of the last Strat players you'd ever think of.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think it's an interesting thing, isn't it, with signatures. And, you know, I don't think I'd ever be lucky enough to be offered one. But if I went for one,
it'd be Music Man, yeah.
It would. I just, you know, I just absolutely love that James Valentine. It is the best. Really should just try and reach out to his management again and be like, just come on the podcast and just, I know we met him that one time, but just come on the podcast and just be like, yeah, I made the best guitar ever. What of it? But yeah, now I've got a new guitar to kind of fall in love with.
Wonderful.
And I don't have to do much to it.
Wonderful news.
Or not more than I thought. But if anyone's got any suggestions, any listeners have got suggestions, do this or try that, then drop them in the group. Let's have a chat.
How are your Bass 6 modifications going?
Well, interesting. So James Dore, was that James Dore? I think it was. That was his name. In the Facebook group said, oh, you should get one of these hardtail conversion plates, which I've never seen before. But it's a very interesting and simple idea. And he was like, oh, I've got one on my Squire. And I was like, where can you even find these? And I found a few, but they're not easy to find anywhere. So I spent a little while searching around, and I did manage to find a company in America that makes a basic specific one that I assume will fit the Squire. So everything that I read said that from a parts perspective from Fender, the Squire parts are basically the same as the other brands.
Right.
The other models they make, to like in terms of Jaguar and Jazzmaster, to basically so they don't have to manufacture a different type of trem. But ultimately, the string spacing should be slightly different on a Bass 6 compared to a Jaguar or Jazzmaster. So I found a company online called Faction Guitars that make a Bass 6 specific hardtail plate. So I've taken the punt and ordered one of those, and it is basically exactly the same plate that goes on the trem system, except it's just got 6 cut out holes that you put the strings in rather than thread them through the trem. It's a genius idea to take the trem out of the guitar, and then obviously it just comes up and then sits on the bridge as normal. You can buy something called a buzz stop, which is like an extra roller that the strings go under to alter the break angle slightly to stop some of the buzzing. I've bought one of those hardtail plates to see how it goes.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, I'm excited to see how this becomes. What else are you thinking? Is that kind of where you're at the moment? Have you made any decisions about anything else?
I tell you, one thing that makes a huge difference is just giving your frets a clean and cleaning the fretboard on your Squire if you haven't done it before, because the fretboard was super dry. I mean, you don't change the strings that often. And once I put some labellas on it, I'm definitely not going to be changing the strings that often at all. I bought a set of the round wounds in the end, because the flat wounds were just...
No, Matt, it's a false economy. The round wounds might be £20 cheaper, but they're going to be... You know, they're going to go dead in 6 months. The flat rounds, you never change again.
I sort of want them to go a bit dead, though.
Okay. All
right. But I don't... I know it's the flat rounds. And the last time I had a guitar with anything similar, I had a Burns bass with the tape wounds on it.
Black Knight on tape wounds.
Yeah, the black strings.
You're talking dirty to me now.
I know. It did feel good. It did feel good. But yeah, I think, to be honest, again, when I took it apart, in a sense, I put a tortoiseshell scratch plate on it, which is part of the reason I was like, I can't. But also, I put a tortoiseshell scratch plate on it that I bought off eBay, which definitely shipped from some sort of crap factory in China that fits. Although one of the pickup holes is routed slightly too big, so there's a bit of a like 5mm gap around one of the pickups, which I'm not so bothered about, but I'm like, I did only pay like 20 quid for it, and then I've basically ruined the environment by shipping it probably by air. So I sort of felt really depressed after I'd sort of received that and gone, I can't believe I've paid 20 quid from a scratch plate from China.
Yeah.
I should have just forked out and got a proper one, really. But anyway, I took it apart and I was like, actually, this guitar is really good. Just really, really good. Like, you know, it's well built, you know, the frets are finished nicely. Yes, they could do with a bit of a clean. The fretboard needs a bit of a kind of rehydrate. But actually, the guitar itself is built really, really well. The only thing I thought about changing realistically, and I know we sort of talked about this, Joe, it'd be interested to get your thoughts on it, is just changing the pickups.
Yes.
I don't know. Just sort of thought about, you know, maybe going, well, what else could you make it sound like?
So you have, so since last week when we spoke about this, you have taken off the plate and had a look, and there's no swimming pool route, nothing as lucky as that. So you do have to cut into the body if you want to change the pickup size. So what are you thinking? Do you just want to, because I'm happy to do that. I've already mentioned what the pickups that I think I'm going to get, but what do you think you'd do?
Well, I spoke to, because I actually like all three pickups on, or just the neck and the bridge on.
Right.
It's pretty much how I leave it all the time.
I favour the neck and the middle. I pretty much don't use the bridge. I'm thinking if I got a custom plate cut, I'd actually just not have the third pickup rooted and remove it completely.
I like that idea. That sounds quite cool, actually. I don't know, really. I'm talking to Stuart at Sunbear, and I was just like, I don't know. Like, I don't want this to be overly bassy. Because, you know, I do use it for more chord stuff and, you know, kind of some sort of more ambient stuff. So need it to cut through a little bit. Definitely don't want them to be too like honky in the mid range. But I was like, I don't know. I was like, probably don't want to go full Jack Bruce vintage, but then I also don't want to go like mega modern. Just do what you think is gonna be best. And I think the only thing probably worth doing is changing the pots on it. They use those really cheap, like tiny.
Oh, they're horrible, pots. Yeah.
So, you know, James over at Home Tone does make a Basics harness.
Does he? Oh, I didn't realize.
Yeah,
oh, that's exciting.
But I've realized, Joe, as I'm moving house and I'm starting to sort things out, I found a box in my loft full of basically guitar parts that have been ripped out of various projects over the years. And I must own about 30 really high quality guitar pots that have just come from like various harnesses or other things. I feel really bad, actually. And whether the guys from this company still listen or not, but Gunstreet Wiring, who we had a few bits from a while back on the podcast, they actually made me a custom wiring harness for my telly. They also did one for my SG. And then they also made me one for my Les Paul, which ultimately I never put in because I sold the Les Paul. So I've got this amazing wiring harness for a Les Paul.
And all the more reason to buy another Les Paul.
And I'm like, yeah, well, exactly. I was like, should I just sell this? I'm never going to use it. I'm like, no, I'll save it because at one point I'll own a Les Paul. But I've got loads of really nice guitar pots. I've got loads of, somehow, I think because I bought a bunch to put in loads of my guitars and then somehow they're not in the guitars anymore and I don't know why, but the bare knuckle make a kind of really like high quality like paper and oil cap capacitor for tone controls. I've got like four of them, like kicking around. Just like so many parts. I'm like, oh my God, this is really embarrassing. Like, where did all this stuff come from? So I probably don't need them to make a harness, because when I get the pickups trained, she'll be like, can you just put all these really nice pots in it, since I've got a load kicking around? But yeah, definitely the electronics are the kind of things, like the pots and stuff, are probably the weakest point about it. I mean, you could put a mastery trim on it. I am going to change the bridge for some sort of better quality, more solid saddles.
Right.
Everything else, I'm like, it's fine. Just give the frets a good clean. It's fine.
Fair
and
enough.
It's funny, because the more, especially when I messed around with the EOB, you kind of go, you know, when we worked in shops, it's all about custom shop or bust. Do you know what I mean? It's all about, like, especially when we worked in GAC, it was like, what's the coolest custom shop? Like, what's the most awesome specs you can have? And I just remember playing a lot less of, like, normal guitars. Oh, that sounds awful to say, but, you know, when you ordered, you know, when I got to order, like, every custom shop that, like, came into the shop, pretty much. Do you know what I mean? And you got to pick and choose out of cases, you know. We did it all the time. And now, yeah. I play less guitars. And actually, you just appreciate guitars more when you actually get the chance to play a nice one,
yeah,
from any
absolutely.
Range. And I think there's so many great Squire guitars, Mexican guitars, but, you know, and guitars are just like a mid price point now. And actually, you know, you mentioned it right at the beginning of the podcast, secondhand. I mean, there's been such an explosion in secondhand guitars in the last 2 years, because of supply shortages and demand and all sorts of things. I mean, just like the stuff you can buy secondhand that you would have never seen before. I mean,
yeah.
It's just, there's loads of great stuff out there, but also just loads of great stuff coming out from like Squire and stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, they're just so consistent. They're so good. The quality is so good.
Mm. But, you know, but it's interesting that now alongside that, things that were great standard guitars, like American standard Strats from 2000, to the same price they were 22 years ago. It's like the ultimate investment. You've like, if you owned one of them and then you bought one new and you sold it now, you'd lose no money.
Well, I think the ultimate investment is any form of Blink-182 signature model, because the prices on the Tom DeLonge and the Mark Hoppus, either the Tom DeLonge Gibson or the Fender and the Mark Hoppus precision bass pickup in a jazz bass body with a P bass neck. They're unbelievable. I remember, you know, I shared on our like a private little Guitar Nerds group, Matt, where I shared that a picture came up on my Facebook of me, you know, holding a couple of P basses back in the Get Guitar Shop, you know, like 10 years ago or whatever. And there's a Mark Hoppus on the wall for like $599. And
that's
now,
crazy, man.
Now they're like, if you can find one, and the one comes up every blue moon, they're £1,500, you know.
That's mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is. And I think that's the thing. It's all about the generational buzz around those sure. kind of things, because...
Oh, you mean because 18-year-olds bought them 20 years ago?
Yeah, it's like...
And now we're all 38.
I can't remember if I talked about this on the podcast before, but my dad, I kind of similar to your dad, Joe, is into cars and classic cars and things like that. But my dad, yeah, I think it was a similar age. My dad's 72.
Yeah.
So if his idea of like a classic car was when he was, you know, 10, you know, to 20, it was cars from like the 1930s to the 1940s or the 1950s. They were classic cars to him. So they're the cars that he wants. But everyone who wants those cars are now in their 80s. And they're like, I can't maintain a car that's, I mean, my dad just sold a car that's nearly 100 years old. Ooh, you know, and you just think, but now the popular cars, the cars from like the 80s and the 90s, because 90s kids who couldn't drive, who couldn't have those cars, have now got money and want those cars. And it's almost like when you were 10 or 12 or 13 and you couldn't get the Mark Hoppus one. So now now you're 38 and everyone wants one. The price inevitably goes up. So yeah, it's very much like a generational thing, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is mad. It's one of those ones that I just you wish you could have bought. There's definitely been a few of those where I'm like, man, if you'd have been able to buy one of them, you'd be laughing now, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, the crazy one is that I remember playing, before I even really knew who John Mayer was, playing the very first signature they did, the Black Strat that came in the deluxe hard case.
Of course, yeah.
They were $14.99, and I think they go for about 20 grand. It's just like, imagine that as a return on investment.
That's,
I mean,
that's
just
the
like,
one you want.
Absolutely bonkers. Mm. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, things aren't limited anymore.
No.
You know, in one way, because everyone knows how much money they can make. Some things are truly limited because of part supply, but, you know, when it comes to guitars, it's like limited could be 50,000 guitars.
Well, it's not but it's not just about how many they are. It's about how willing people are to part with them. The fact is that in the early 2000s, Fender made an awful lot of Mark Copper signature models. We had them coming in and out. They did them in two colors initially. They did them in the blue and the green. Then when he did Plus Foot, then when they did Pants and Jacket, they released them in white with a black paint and black with a black paint. Then when he did Plus 44, they released a through green and a white with a taut guard. And then they reversed the pickup. And I think, I don't know what finish that came in then. But there have been 3-4 iterations of that guitar. And they were coming in and out of GAC the whole time I was there. Selling very well. All for $599, $699. There are a lot of them on the market out there. But you never see them come up secondhand. Because the people that have them obviously actually do really like those instruments. So it's sort of, it's not just the player. It's obviously, it is a great guitar because, you know, that wasn't a limited run instrument by any stretch. Mm. It goes for three times its value quite happily now. And the same with the Tom DeLonge 333. You know, sorry, dear listener, that I'm just talking about the Blink-182 models. Whether you like the band or not, you shouldn't. They're terrible. But I do because I'm a terrible loser. But, you know, the instruments themselves are very, very cool looking. And that ES-333 is incredibly cool. And you just never see them secondhand.
Yeah. I mean, God, imagine if you managed to buy one of them.
I know.
It's the same with the Billy Joe, which we've talked about before.
Oh, of course, yeah.
I mean, I'm amazed. Someone was saying the other day, I think it was Andy Mooney that said there's a lot of amazing guitar players, but there's very few guitar heroes. And, you know, because obviously we still talk about Slash being one of the still guitar heroes, realistically. You know, he, of so many ages, especially when we worked in the shop, you know, you'd get 10-year-olds to 60-year-olds being like, oh, Slash, I want to sound like Slash from Guns N' Roses, whatever.
Arguably, he invented a sound, though.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference. It's not an infinite thing. Like, people, you know, you get that sort of, forgive me, dear listener, that common baby boomer criticism that we're not creating stadium rock and roll bands anymore. And it's not that the generations aren't. It's that you can't just, it's not just, it doesn't start from zero every time. The rock and roll and sort of that whole movement is a thing that started at a certain point and we're moving further away from that point. It's not reinventing for every generation. We're moving away from it. And so it's harder and harder to create on, you know, one instrument with one flipping tuning, as far as most of you are concerned. You know, it's harder to create those things, that new sound.
Yeah, but what I was going to say is the one person that really feels like who was slightly later than that, who still commands a guitar hero level, is Billy Joe Armstrong.
Yeah, I think so. I think he is quite, I don't really like the band, but he's definitely responsible for a very, very particular tone, style, sound.
Yeah.
And one that's had a big impact on, I think, you know, our generation and younger, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. But it was always that question at GAC. It's like, what guitar should I buy? It's an investment. And I was like, I don't think you should ever buy a guitar as an investment.
No, it defeats the point.
It does. And you don't want to play it. And I think it's like, buy a guitar that you want to play and love. And you know what? If you're lucky enough in 20 years and you do definitely want to sell it, then maybe you'll make some money on it. But I definitely feel there's a lot of unique choice for brand new guitars now that will, some of them will pique a lot of people's interest in like 20 years' time.
Oh, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. Well, we are coming up to the end of this week's episode of the Guitarnuts podcast. We haven't done half our stuff, Matt. I was going to do a demo this week and everything. We haven't got around to it. I guess we'll do that over on the Patreon episode.
Yeah, let's do a bit of demo on the Patreon episode. Still as much feedback as we can get from people on should we, shouldn't we, what works, what doesn't.
Yeah.
Maybe we should... Should we talk about some reverb bestsellers? Should we leave that till next week?
Let's leave that till next week, because that's a big old topic.
Oh, you're
in
not
itself.
Here next week, are you?
Oh, no. Well, the week after then.
The week after.
That's a big old topic in itself. But we'll talk about some other stuff over on the Patreon. Maybe we'll take some questions as well. I think, by the way, just on the Bass 6 thing, I think I'm going to get one of the 59 PAF humbuckers that some bear do to go in the neck of my Bass 6. I think that's going to be my mod.
I've got one of those in the bridge of my Nick Huben. It's very good.
Oh, there you go. There you go. It will be exciting. Anyway, dear listener, that is all the time we have on this week's episode. So you can, of course, join us over on Patreon, where we record an extra episode every week. We've got 3 Patreon tiers. $1, where you get this episode ad-free and early. $5 gets you access to the Patreon back catalogue. $10 gets your name sung in the song at the end. Join us on any of our social media platforms, but especially on Facebook, where you can get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thank you for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Bye.
Anton Fryant and Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, Danny Walker, Jorrit Brown, Andy Hoffler, Holly Simpson, John Conway, Russell Healing, Paul Drew, Peter Pesh, Ty Allen, Yogi the Guitarist, Sean Hughes, Brian Hansen, Eric Emma, Jeffrey Wax, Brian Einsler, Gavin Vanden Linden, Andy Manley,